Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Normal Adjustments. This is your host, Nicole. And today I bring to you a bit of a different episode. This episode today is actually a panel discussion that I moderated for a association called WFFC, which stands for Women in Flavor and Fragrance Commerce. And it's a professional association founded in 1982, to provide women in the flavor and fragrance industry like a forum for networking, education, career advancement, etc. And in the efforts of provide women with support, a friend of mine, Glenda Mensa, created a event and like a leg of the association called Pink Notes to provide women with breast cancer with support, or women going through a breast cancer journey or that went through a breast cancer journey. Because Glenda herself is a breast cancer survivor. It all started back, I think, in 2017, that Glenda was diagnosed herself with breast cancer, holding an international position at work. And during kind of this life event, one of the things that really, really helped her and she realized was that work and maintaining active at work really helped her state of mind during that process and that treatment. So she became very passionate about the importance of providing support for women in a breast cancer journey and to help them walk through the path of recovery while thriving at work. So she started this program called Pink Notes, and this is basically was an inaugural event for Pink Notes. Because kind of the whole effort started in COVID, and she was very happy to finally have an event to kind of fundraise and have three amazing panelists who were Glenda herself and Paula Flori and Patricia Flores. All of them breast cancer survivors that also were working and thriving while going through their breast cancer journey. So here it is, so I'll let them tell their story themselves and you guys hear the panel discussion. I think it's very empowering and I was very happy to partake. And thank you, Glenda, for making me part of this. You know how much I'm obsessed with these type of conversations and I'm happy to include it in the podcast as well. So enjoy.
Welcome to Normal Adjustments, because not all tales are created equal. And neither are the people that tell them.
But before we start, that our panelists here have wonderful journeys, I want each of them to kind of give a brief intro of themselves and their journey that got them here to this point. And let's start with Glenda.
Hi, Nicole. Thank you for accepting my invitation to be the moderator today. I'm very happy that you're here with us. And just, I'm going to give a very quick introduction. So a lot of people in this industry already know me. My name is Glenda Mensa. I'm co-founder and chair of the WFSC Foundation. I was diagnosed with a stage 2 breast cancer in 2017 at the age of 37. And I was working on a very demanding international role with a lot of responsibilities and also doing my MBA at the time. So it was school and work, but at the same time, the day I received my diagnosis and after the crying and the acceptance, I realized that working and studying actually was a distraction from what was going on emotionally. And because of that, once I finished treatment, it became a passion and a mission to help other women in this industry and others and in the general community to thrive at work. It definitely helps. And I needed to share that with other women in the same situation. So that's my short story. So we will talk more during the questions.
Yeah. Thank you, Glenda. Paula?
Yes, thanks. My name is Paula Flory, and I'm the founder and the executive director of Move Over Breast Cancer, which is a new 501c3 supporting women and families that have breast cancer. I am a survivor myself. I was diagnosed in 2011. I was 46 years old and in the best shape of my life. And I found my own breast cancer, and it was a stage 3. By the time we found it, it was not something that was detected on a mammogram. Luckily, the technology has gotten a lot better since then. And I think a lot more breast cancers are being found. Unfortunately, mine was not, but fortunately, I did find it myself. And I am also on the board of the WFFC Foundation, Pink Notes, and a friend of Glenda's. And as a survivor, it was a very difficult diagnosis, obviously. I was working as a fitness director at a gym, and I was teaching, believe it or not, 17 classes a week. When I say I was in the best shape of my life, I mean it. So obviously, with a diagnosis of a stage 3 breast cancer and having to have a mastectomy and all of the treatments that go along with that cancer diagnosis, I knew that I would not be able to continue to be employed in the same way that I had been. My employer was wonderful, very, very supportive. In fact, I was at work when I received the diagnosis and dropped to my knees. And my immediate supervisor was a wonderful, an amazing person, and she saw what was happening, and she literally came to my aid and picked me up off the floor and literally carried me into her office. So to me, that was just the most wonderful, it was a real human moment in the workplace, and it helped me to see that I would be able to figure out how to navigate this journey through work with her support. It did turn out that I was not able to continue in that role, but in retrospect, I understand why, but it would have been a wonderful thing to, as Glenda had said, to have that distraction of something else to focus on. But fortunately, I did have two young teenagers at home, so they kept me busy and kept me fighting. So during my journey, I knew that I had to sort of to reimagine what my life was going to look like after going through all of this. Would I ever be able to have that same energy, enough of that energy to do the same kind of work that I was doing before? I did have a background in social work and counseling, and I'd had, you know, a first part of my career before parenthood. So I knew that during my journey that I really wanted to do something important with this diagnosis to give it a reason, really, that I wanted to validate. For me, it was important to say, okay, I received this devastating news, and now I'm going to take that and do something positive for myself and for others with that. I didn't know at the time that it would necessarily be focused on women and families that were affected by breast cancer. I just let the journey unfold. And as it turns out, 2 years to the day of my diagnosis, I was hired as the director of a breast cancer organization. And several years later, in 2020, I launched my own nonprofit to help women with breast cancer.
Amazing. Thank you, Paula.
Thank you.
Now, Patricia.
Hi, my name is Patricia Flores. I was diagnosed in 2017 as well. I was 32 by then, and the way I found my my lump, it was on my right breast. I was breastfeeding my newborn, and 20 days after I gave birth, after all the tests and questions and MRIs, I was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer. Working was a key for me. I needed to be busy. I'm a store manager, so I work around women. So I had many clients that were going through that process. So I remember getting diagnosed and seeing all those stories and all that faces in me. I was like, oh my God, this is me now. I'm like one of them. So I need to go back and tell them my story. And I get super emotional every time that I talk about it, because going through breast cancer and surviving is such a powerful journey. And I was telling them before we jump in, you just feel like a superhero. And I love sharing. I just want to be able to keep helping others. And I love what you, Glenda, and Paula are doing as well, Nicole, for other women, because we need to speak up and help others.
Well, you are all my superheroes, and thank you for being here and allowing me to tell these stories and bring them to life as well. And in going by the topic, you know, women in the workplace with breast cancer journeys, I'm not going to shy away from it. It must have been a devastating and horrible news to get. And at the moment that you get those news and you're a working woman, I want to explore a little bit of those feelings, and how was it to tell your employer, and what support did you get? Just a bit of background. I am in the corporate world myself. I am a product manager in tech. I'm an engineer by major, and I've had to go to an employer and have those news and say, I have to take time off, or I wanted to keep working the normal pace because I thought that was what I needed to do. And because of the people that supported me, I was able to look at things differently, and I was able to make those adjustments to have an arrangement that worked both for me and my employer. So I extend that question and that topic to you guys here to kind of dissect a little bit, because Paula, you expressed how supported you were, even though you then made a decision to probably not pursue that job, but you did have that support. But I know, Glenn, that you kind of had a different story in the opposite lens.
Yeah, so I have it was honestly scary to tell my supervisors, because I have three different supervisors at a time based in different countries with all different points of view. But surprisingly, when I went to each one of them, I had the same conversation, and their support was really overwhelming. How they just said, do you need time off? What we can do to help you? And I think that was between the supervisors and HR, that was the communication they did themselves. So I didn't have to go directly to HR to take that time off, which I told them since the beginning, I don't want to take the time off. So they did the arrangement and to work more from home. And then because of the traveling, I talked to my oncologist and I said to him, I need to know how I can travel. And he said, well, you can do it every 3 weeks, because my chemo was every 3 weeks. So that third week before the next treatment, he said, you're gonna feel normal. You're gonna have energy. And that's what I did. And with the clearance of my doctor and the communication with my supervisors, I was able to book those trips that I needed to book. During those weeks, I was allowed. And, you know, they always ask me, are you fine with it? Every time I have to do it. Honestly, sometimes I didn't feel the whole energy to take a long trip. But once I was there and doing my thing, I got that energy back. And it was more of a mental state. If I was home, just recovering in my bed, I don't think I would be here, because it's important to have that kind of push and support. I feel better today. I have a purpose. I have challenges at work mentally that keep me stable and active. If I didn't have that that support, and I knew that they were nervous about it. Are you sure? Because, you know, liability and all of those things, which is completely understandable. But at the same time, I think I was in my more productive state in both work and at school. So I was doing all the work things during the day, and at night I was on an online school. So I have like a 24 hours different distractions to keep me active. And honestly, that was the best part of the support that my supervisors gave me. And same thing with the school. I talked to the professors, I even talked to the dean, and they let me to slow down in one of the courses and just delay it a little bit so I can finish, I have more time. So definitely without that support, it's not possible.
And what Glenda is speaking about is really kind of what has been a motivating force for me in moving forward to try to help women move through the challenges of breast cancer diagnosis and treatment, is that cancer doesn't define us. It doesn't have to define us. And if we have a lot of time to sit back and just think and lie in our beds, as Glenda said, you know, she was so busy, that it is often very difficult to not feel as though we need to lead in the outside world with that diagnosis, like tell everyone we meet, you know, I have breast cancer. You know, sometimes we're bald, so, you know, and if you don't wear a wig, and Glenda looked amazing without a wig on, by the way, that, you know, sometimes it's difficult to not feel as though you're leading with your breast cancer or being defined by your breast cancer. And I think that if you are able to continue to work and have employers that support you, and if you're able to have people around you who encourage you to do things like go back to school or have, you know, different interests and hobbies, or, you know, taking care of your children and just being out there in the world, cancer is a chronic disease. It is not a death sentence, whether it's a stage zero or metastatic disease, you still have a lot of life to live. Very often the emotions, I believe, and the, you know, the psychology of that diagnosis can drag us down equally as much as the physical trauma that we incur from the surgeries and the treatments that we have to go through. So I think the way Glenda handled it was beautiful, and she's an exceptional person and very strong, and she had this wonderful employer. Having worked with more than 2,000 women in the 8.5 years that I've been doing the work that I do, I can say that there are not that many women who felt 100% supported in the workplace. And I think a lot of it is about having a two-way conversation. You have to be comfortable enough to approach human resources or someone within your team to let them know. A lot of women still feel shame and fear associated with that diagnosis. And so many, many times in my work with all of these women from different cultures and different, you know, different parts of the world, it was part of my job to make sure that I encouraged them and could give them the language to use in the workplace to describe what was happening and what they would need, and also to let their employer know that they were not necessarily going to die, that this, again, is a chronic disease, and that if they chose to continue working, that they could work something out that was actually very therapeutic throughout.
Yeah, and it's very powerful what you guys have to say. It really resonates with my journeys, my story, and a lot of things I've observed. It's interesting because last week I was having a conversation with another panel group about disabilities and kind of the societal constructs that actually adds limitations when somebody has a journey. In this case, it's a chronic condition of cancer, breast cancer. In other sense, it can be lymphedema, it can be something else. And there, it's this type of conversations that we have to have and keep having, so that it is more and more normal that anybody can have an adjustment to make their life possible, right? Because we can all not fit that mold. And that adjustment might just look like working from home. For Glenda, that was just meant an adjusted schedule of 3 weeks here, 1 week there. And that made her not feel like a liability, not feel like you were going through something different and tough because you were treated normal in some sort of way, which is, I think, very powerful and important to maintain, even in a difficult situation, to my point of view.
I agree. And then there's something that Paula mentioned that is important. If you're comfortable to go talk to HR, they might be overwhelmed too. Maybe they haven't had that kind of case, which is what happened to me. They were willing to help, but they were not completely, they didn't know what to do exactly with me. So it was the guidance of my supervisors and the communication with that HR, and they were open to help. I think sometimes they just don't know how to do it and how they have the best tools to offer you, or like do an arrangement to working from home. Now it's more normal, but years ago working from home was not as normal. And those kind of tools and conversations, I think a lot of the employees need to understand that it's not as scary to go talk to HR. And you can explain to them, you can actually do their suggestions. Listen, this is my, for example, my chemo schedule. Maybe I can take these few days off, or maybe I can work from home. I remember sitting on the chemo chair with my laptop working, and I was sitting there for 6 hours. So basically a full work day. I did so much, and I didn't have to focus on here getting all these chemicals in my body. And I was sitting in that chair, but that was because I was able to have that conversation with my supervisors, and then they had it with HR, and then I had it with HR. So it was a combination of all these people having this communication. If you are afraid, which is understandable, that you're afraid of gonna lose my job, and if I lose my job, where's my health insurance gonna be? These are very powerful fears that you have. What do I do if I lose my job to pay for this treatment and my insurance and all of that? But I think people actually appreciate, from my point of view, people actually appreciate that you are honest about what is your diagnosis, what is the treatment you have to go through. And I know it's difficult to explain, and some people it's also difficult to hear because it's not a comfortable conversation, but it's necessary. And helping each other, I think in my case, I'm sure many others are actually more productive at work because they have a huge distraction for what's going on in their life.
Just to pimp on that really quick, I remember when I got diagnosed with breast cancer, and like the next day I went to see my oncologist, and he presented the whole like treatment. And I remember he asking me, I was on maternity leave, I was 20 days in after giving birth. So I remember he asking me, I was like, do you work? I was like, I'm currently maternity leave, I'm planning to go back as soon as I'm on maternity leave. It's done. He's like, do you want time to speak to your, before we try treatment, do you want to talk to your employer? And now everything makes sense. Like, I would never imagine being diagnosed and not having the employer support. I was very confident that my employer was going to support me 100% just because we are a retail woman store that support women. And I was like, I will be fine. I promise you, let's start next week. And I remember calling my my direct report, and she was amazing. She was there for me. She said that I can take as many time as I want to recover, but working full-time was a key for me too.
And it's very powerful what you all expressing, right? There's a huge correlation of the three of you feeling lucky and grateful and empowered, because probably there's a correlation there with your journeys and the positive support in a majority, can I say, probably there's stories of not good support there as well, but in a majority sense of the support that you got, so that you were able to get be here and feel and wanting to talk about it because of how important that was to you. So in that lens, what is a recommendation you guys can give to employers in that one lens, and also patients going through that initial diagnosis stages, and that they need to approach these conversations, because difficult conversations from both sides, that you think will be helpful?
Well, as a nonprofit director and someone who worked for another breast cancer nonprofit for several years, I think that employers having a list of resources to refer women to when they receive that diagnosis is imperative, because the support that we can give is far and away more more well-rounded than what your oncology team can give you. They're focused on saving your life, and that's what they're good at. But all of these other bits and pieces of your life, like your job and how to navigate all of that, is, I think, best set and given to or assigned to a group that is available to provide that kind of information. And I think that if more employers had a list of resources for women to say, you know, we're here to support you, but here's a list of places that you can turn to for counseling, for, you know, support during treatment, for hair loss, for fatigue, for, you know, so that you can have access to complementary care like Reiki and massage and acupuncture and all of these things that treatment modalities that will alleviate some of the side effects that you have from the treatments. And that can make you a better employee. If you're going to acupuncture and it is helping you with your pain and it's helping you with your energy level, you'll be better suited to working from home and being able to work an entire day, or going into the office, or traveling and having your immune system strong enough to be able to travel for work. So I think it's really important for human resources to get those lists together. And it's been my experience that that's not really yet up to speed. I have an organization that can provide a lot of that support, and I would love for businesses to be able to call on me to provide this free support for women.
Yes, and on that note, Paula just mentioned about HR being able to have resources or where to send you if they don't know what to do. There are plenty of organizations that know and have the resources to have some sort of orientation, because it's really at the beginning, you don't know what to do, you're completely lost. And this is part of our mission as a foundation, to build those kind of data and resources that we can provide to HR departments, so they don't have anything else to do. We can just provide a package. This is the resources in this area. For example, well, we're going to start with New Jersey. And at least they can say, this is how we can help you, providing these list of resources. And it's actually something that any patient would really appreciate. Because when you get those resources, you reach out to them, and that's how you get a lot of help. And that's how actually how I met Paula, going to the organization where she was working prior to her current nonprofit. And I got a lot of resources there, a support group, my first week, and things like that, that they don't seem like a lot when you are from an outsider. But when you are a patient, those small things completely make a difference in your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can say from my personal point of view, there was the time, there's two things I want to cover here. There was a time in which I didn't want to add those limitations, and I thought that taking time off was adding limitations to myself, and I didn't want to accept that, right? And a lot of people might have that same approach, and you just push yourself through and to a point that you can get to either exhaustion or just actually not be responsible enough, because either to your health or to your employer, which can get you into the negative angle, which you don't want to get to. And one of the things that really helped was the having, you know, employers themselves or managers or whoever, like, have people in charge, and you're working with humans from a human level, understanding there's policies in companies and saying, have you explored this policy XYZ? You know, we have some help for taking time off an illness. You can take a medical leave, or even sending you a link or a paperwork of where does that go? Because at a moment in time, you're exacerbating for the information on a situation that you might not like even think about those things, because you're just thinking about your personal journey more than and how would you look like more than anything else, right? And that is our responsibility that also lies on a human level as an employer. And I think that's extremely helpful. At least it was for me. And the other thing I wanted to approach is, let's say there's a person that's really having difficult time accepting this, right? Because we have to talk about that. What would be the best advice on an employee level? What is the benefit of coming forward and being honest with it in the case that you're still in that place that you don't feel that comfort?
I will leave this one to Paola.
So the question is coming from as an employee, why would it be to your benefit if you're feeling really devastated and traumatized by this? What is the upside of going to your employer?
Yes,
and telling them?
Yeah, because I know a lot of people, you know, live in the dark with their journeys, and with a breast cancer journey, I know people have taken time off and never told anyone. And eventually people found out that they went through a journey. So there is a benefit of which that is why you guys are here, from actually coming forward with your story. And what would recommendations in that story be?
Yes, I absolutely believe that for the most part, there is a huge benefit in going to your employer and speaking with HR. First of all, I think that you, a person who's going through that time and feeling very vulnerable, will feel very, very supported. I think generally people who are working in HR are trained to be sure that they are compassionate and treat everyone, you know, with empathy and kindness when something like that is being shared. But I also think more importantly is that if they're open with not only with their employer, but with their colleagues, they will find a sense of community, because cancer survivors are everywhere. And once people have been through the cancer journey, or who have a connection to it for a loved one or a close friend, they want to help and support you in any way they can, by creating an email chain for delivering meals to your house, or offering to, you know, pick your children up at school if your kids go to the same school, or babysitting, or just, you know, taking you out for a glass of wine when you're feeling good, driving you to one of your treatments. So many things that colleagues can come together and do. And I think that there's so much hope and so much empowerment in that sense of community. I am always so overwhelmed by the number of people that come forward and say, I had it too, and I made it through. And it's extraordinarily inspiring to hear other people's stories, and for the most part, provides you with a deep sense of hope and healing. So I believe that there's always an upside to sharing that information with your employer, and always, always recommend that people do so.
And in those lines, there was a question submitted that said, how do I tell my coworkers I have breast cancer? Do you have any advice for this? And I think that is a good next question, just because, like you said, there is a huge element of a sense of community that people sometimes overlook when you go through a journey. Once you find that even social media or that friend at work that been through an ex journey, that creates great bonds.
Yes, and I maybe Patricia and or Glenda can speak better to this question than I can, but I do think that you need to choose the colleague that you feel the closest to, or you feel safest sharing this information with, if you are the kind of person that is hesitant to be open about it for whatever reason. Find that person that you believe will hear you and listen and understand, And I think from there, the kindness will spread. It's very, very rare to have someone have come back to me in my experience and say, you know, I shared the information with, you know, my colleagues, and they were just, you know, they didn't. There's always going to be someone who doesn't know how to react and feels uncomfortable with that information. But I think generally, if you find the right person, that the news will spread in a very positive way.
Yeah, I just to tie information back to it. As I mentioned before, I work in a retail woman store, so I'm my direct report is a woman. My other boss is another woman, so it's a bunch of powerful women that work together. So I think going through being diagnosed, I think just telling them, it was so beautiful and peaceful because I knew I would have their back. I knew that my company would not let me go. I knew they would be there for me. I knew if I call out because I wasn't able to wake up that morning, they will be there for me. They will say no. And there were many times that I did not feel well and I was at the store and they were like, Patricia, you can go. Like, we got you covered. Like, you're fine. So the support that I got from my company and my peers and my clients and my employees, it was beautiful. And it's very important that you speak up. I personally feel like people should be speak up as long as you feel comfortable. Again, my environment is only women, so for me it was very easy topic to speak to. I cannot speak in behalf if I have any mans, because I maybe the situation would be a little different, but because we were all women, I think it was easier conversation to have and express how you feel.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I have all my supervisors were men. So even though I have a good relationship with the three of them, it was still a little bit uncomfortable, just because I have to explain some things. So this is what's going to happen now. And that was kind of uncomfortable. But at the same time, their reaction made me feel comfortable. As soon as I saw their reaction, then the rest of the conversation was comfortable. But just the thought of, I have to explain that I have to go through this and this and this, not in details, but some part of it, I have to come forward, this is what's gonna happen. Because some people just think that when you are diagnosed, you just go to chemo and surgery and that's it. But there's many other things that had to happen before that. And in my case, it was also an IVF situation at retrieval. So I didn't have children at the time, so I have to do all of this preparation before chemo to make sure that once I was done, I was able to have children in some way. So I had to explain that to my supervisor. So they said, well, when chemo is gonna start, like, well, before that, I have to do all these other treatments, and I have like two different minor surgeries before. So some of these things I have to explain. And you know, at the beginning, I felt like, oh, how do I explain this? But then, you know, as the conversation moved forward, then I felt comfortable telling them, and they have my back. But yes, that is a good point, that how you tell, which colleague you tell to. And after that, once I told some of the colleagues, and I also have to start a GoFundMe. Because, you know, treatment, even with insurance, is very expensive. And it was impossible to cover all of that on my own. So once I started the GoFundMe and social media and I found a community, the support was overwhelming from some of my colleagues that knew about it. Because it's not something that I just spread to the company, just to some colleagues where I felt comfortable. And you know, social media, my friends, and it did help a lot. And but it's like Nicole mentioned before, not everyone feels comfortable just going to the employer. But this is what we want, to have these kind of conversations and put the word out there that we know it's uncomfortable. And if you are not feeling that you can do it on your own, we can support you. We can give you talking points, or that Paula has done it many times. Even your doctors can guide you through. Or people like us, our foundation, things like that, we can help, because it's not easy, and not everyone reacts the same way when they're diagnosed.
Exactly. And that's a good switch of gears there. And then you're diagnosed, you told your employer, now you're in your breast cancer journey and treatment, it's either you've been through surgery or you're going through your radiotherapy or chemotherapy. And in those moments right there, you're living that journey. And the obvious start happening. How did the ideal support look like for you that made you kind of be here and tell your story? Start losing your hair, start having those difficult hot flashes.
Yeah, so I, as a story of my personal journey, I started losing my hair while I was in a conference in Italy. And I knew that it was going to happen that week because it was the third week after my first chemo. Our oncologists are, you know, so well prepared, and the level of knowledge, and you know, to give you that heads up, so your hair gonna start falling this week. And
red.
Yes, so I took some of the head wraps with me in preparation for that. And we colleagues that were at the conference, and I have that level of, you know, trust to tell them this is what's happening. So it was very uncomfortable that the morning that I woke up for the first meeting and I saw a lot of hair everywhere, and that I have to use the first head wrap and figure out how I was going to wear it, and then get out and meet my first colleague for breakfast and go crying to him and explain what was happening. It was, overwhelming, but at the same time, it was, like Patricia said before, a beautiful experience because of his reaction and how he basically held me during that whole day and didn't leave me alone, and how are you feeling? And then in every meeting that we have to move, he was sitting next to me because I was telling him, what if my hair falls in someone's plate? Or in the, you know, it was crazy. I didn't know what to do. So I had the hair rod to contain the hair falling, and he was checking on me all the time. So if I didn't tell anyone, I didn't know what I was going to do. Because he way beyond to make me feel comfortable. He's like, there's nothing, and if the hair falls, and he's bald, he's like, if the hair falls, I will tell them it's mine. So, you know, he made it feel like, he made me feel comfortable and helped me through that experience. And at work, so no one else knew what was happening. It was just the woman wearing the head wrap during that conference, and my colleague supporting me.
Well, losing your hair, I think, can be a very, very difficult part of the whole cancer experience. And one of the reasons why I started a program at my previous program and at my own nonprofit, a head shaving program, was because I had my husband shave my head. It was actually his 43rd birthday, and we were heading to a big birthday party that I had planned for him. And all of a sudden, I took a shower to get ready for the party, and my hair starts to fall out. And I thought, oh, now I need to shave it and, you know, wear my new wig to the party. And he shaved my head for me. And, you know, he was a wonderful, loving, supportive partner throughout all of it. But it did not feel organic to our relationship for him to take on that role as caretaker for me to do that. So I now offer that at my organization. I know many other organizations offer it too, where we do kind of a head shaving party. It's like, you have cancer, cancer doesn't have you. Glenda's experience was a little bit different because she was away from home. She was not in familiar surroundings. She didn't have access to a hairdresser or a head shaving equipment or anything like that, and had to kind of roll with the punches, and she handled it beautifully. But there are ways to handle it that make that part of it a lot easier. And I can say from my own personal experience that most women, after I shave their head, tell me, that was a great day. That was so much fun, because I always make them shave a mohawk in their hair and do photos, because when else are you going to have a mohawk? And just allow yourself to embrace this. It's all part of your life's journey. It's part of your life story. And if women and men who are going through cancer can get to that place, then I think it makes some of those things easier. But we have to be, cancer teaches us to be resilient. And, you know, we have to kind of roll with it and do whatever we can to just make it through and keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, I think losing the hair is one of the toughest ones. You guys both say it. I remember my last day of work, I left work having my super long hair and being pregnant, and I came back from maternity leave and I was completely bald and not belly. And I remember my clients coming in and they were like, what? They were also confused. And because it was such a traumatic, for me, losing the hair was the most traumatic situation. I remember waking up that morning, the pillow was full of hair, and I was like, we're going to church. It was a Sunday, I would never forget it. We're going to church. All right, after church, you're going to take me to a salon and we're going to shave my head. And my mom was here with me, and my mom and my husband went with me. And I remember they took videos of me, and I love watching those videos because my smile, I was just so happy. I was like, this is awesome. And I remember taking the first shower without hair. It feels amazing. And I look at the photos right now, and I never wore a wig because I just wanted it to show the world the real me. I just wanted it to be powerful. I wanted to show my two sisters, to my mom, to my husband, and everyone that's watching me that you can do it. And I got empowered by a lot of fighters that were in social media that I connected. They were bold as well. I was like, they look beautiful. They look powerful. I can do it. And I remember walking to Target in church. A lot of women stopped me and they were like, I was you 5 years ago. You look beautiful. Stay strong. Another woman like hugged me out of nowhere, like, you're beautiful. And speaking of hugs, I cannot imagine going through this disease right now with COVID, because you cannot hug anyone. Those hugs when I was going through this process were my favorite. I don't remember any of those people, but I remember those hugs were like recharging my battery to keep going.
Yes, I agree with that. And I started wearing a wig, and then when I realized, first of all, I was like, oh, I look good without hair. And that's why you see that I haven't let my hair grow, and this is going to be for years now. And second, that kind of support from random strangers, it deep, like, and then when I started doing that, the same when I had to go at work and they all knew, and it was, I mean, it's just a different story. And it really helps.
Yeah, getting support out of a vulnerability, it's one of the most beautiful things ever. And I can attest for that, not on my hair, but wearing my garments openly and in color. You know, it's my second skin and I have to do that. And I didn't do it. I hid for many, many years. And being able to kind of express your vulnerability and getting support out of it, it's beautiful. So I encourage everybody to do it as well. And in those topics, conscious of time, we have 9 minutes left, but I just wanted to kind of close this topic here in, you know, we've been talking about that support and how that support going through treatment looks like. And we had a question about, as a colleague, how can I provide support to people? What are good things that you went through, Glenda, that you've explained your hair loss journey, but even for chemo treatments, like audiobook suggestions, gifting headphones, cards, etc. Do you guys have any stories of good support, and how did that look like?
I remember many supports. I can tell you I got a lot of free meals, a lot of motivation letters. Day of my chemos, I always receive a gift. There was always a gift in front of my door in my house when I used to come for my chemo. And I never knew who it was until my last chemo. And it was one of my clients that got my address. So just having just those small details. I know that everyone will give you a blanket, everyone will give you a sock, but I promise you those things will change our mind and it will help us to keep going. Just be there for that person. Don't act like nothing's happening. Just ask them, how is your day today? Don't ask her, how is your day tomorrow? How was just today? Just enjoy, just be the best and help them get through it.
Yeah, I received also some things from some of my clients, and it was so adorable and so encouraging, like sweatshirts with like, you know, the breast cancer logo, and you're a fighter, it goes gets stronger. And those sweatshirts in those cold chemo rooms were priceless. And I have people that crochet blankets, and any of those little things, it really doesn't matter what it is, but the small things. But if you do some research as a colleague, how can I help? It's definitely things for the cold, blankets, socks, sweatshirts. I mean, just spend their hours, a good book, suggestions for a podcast, music, anything that is a distraction during those treatments, because they're lengthy and they go from you are like in a high, I can run a marathon mood to being super tired and colder than usual. It's like a roller coaster when you're sitting there for 5 or 6 hours. And all those little details, like Patricia mentioned, are make a huge difference. So as a colleague, I suggest that you reach out, and if you do not feel comfortable asking directly what do you need, just maybe do some research or ask around. If you know some people that have been through this, ask what would you like to receive or to have when you are in treatment. Or just a phone call, or how are you doing, or a test. Sometimes just are very motivational, like there's this person thinking about me, and that our emotions are all over the place when we're going through this. So yes, just even a phone call or a text helps.
Yes, or a card. Someone gave me, blew up a photograph of me teaching a class, one of my fitness classes, and all of my students wrote things on there, and it was kind of a funny picture of me, and they shared memories on there, and it was just such a wonderful gift. But I think also another thing that a colleague can offer is to just go for a walk during lunch, an outdoor walk. I really believe in, and the research shows that there is great healing in nature and in being outdoors. And it's also very important to continue to move your body if you at all can, you know, during cancer treatment. So to offer to take someone for a walk, if they don't have their sneakers that day, just say, you know, maybe tomorrow after lunch, I'd, you know, love to, you know, just go for a 10-minute walk with you outside if there's a space to do that. I think that can be very healing, very bonding, and just a really good, hopeful experience to share with a colleague.
Thank you, ladies. I wanted to give also you guys a space to kind of let us know where we can find you, so where we can find your organizations or the work that you do in that. Let's start with Paola.
The organization I run is called Move Over Breast Cancer, and it's www.moveoverbreastcancer.org. We are a fully mobile organization, so I have a converted Sprinter van, and it's ready to go, and it's a mobile resource lounge and salon. And if there is anyone that you know in Central New Jersey who would need our services, please reach out to me. And you can also reach out to me anywhere, from anywhere in the world. I'm able to connect you with people who could help you globally, actually, and just speak with you and give you some suggestions about how you can support a loved one or how you can get resources for yourself.
Glenda?
Well, so you can find me through the Dural Foundation. So right now we're using part of the website of the WFSC.org. And also we are very active on Instagram. So you can, so it's by WFSC-Foundation. You can send us messages there and keep track of our events. And also we send emails to our members of the WFSC. So there's so many ways to contact us. So mainly social media is the most active.
And then I don't have any organization. However, you can find me on Instagram. I'm a very active advocate for breast cancer. So is my husband. We have met with, I would say, 3 couples in these past 3 years, and we had shared our stories with them just because we were blessed to have such a beautiful support from everyone. So we just need to return the favor. So if you guys ever need any support or any help, feel free to reach out. Patricia Flores, you can find me on Instagram.